right, John, you saw this, and I think it's an interesting conversation about taunting, sportsmanship, and where the line is. Noah Lyles, everybody knows him, great sprinter, American sprinter.
Yeah, most people know him more for the 100, you know, fastest man on the planet, and we've all talked about the, you know, the possibility of him and Tyreek Hill racing. Well, I don't think we're ever going to actually see it, but Noah Lyles was back on the track in the 200 over the weekend in the U.S. trials, and he was racing against one of his quote-unquote teammates, Kenny Bednarik. Now, Kenny Bednarik, last time they raced, won the 200 meter. This time, Noah Lyles won it. And I believe the difference was 0.04 seconds. So it was, I mean, right there. And as they crossed the finish line, Noah Lyles decided that he was going to stare down Bednarik. And a few steps after the stare down, Bednarik pushes Noah Lyles. Now, it didn't escalate after that.
Right.
They went their separate ways.
That's all it was.
They were all both interviewed after, and they did talk about the gamesmanship of each other. And my question is, where's the line? Where do you cross the line from gamesmanship to unsportsmanlike conduct? Where is that line? Because it's different for everyone.
No, and it is. And I just used yesterday, Kerry Carpenter launches a home run to right field, and he kind of posed and then lets the bat drop just a little bit behind him, right? Like, he enjoyed that home run. Is that showing up the pitcher? I don't have an issue with it, and it's not just because it's my guy. I like bat flips. They're cool. It's exciting.
Yeah, I don't see it. I know old school baseball people will say it's showing up the pitcher. I don't see it as that.
That's fair.
If he's not pointing the bat at the pitcher and then flips it, if he's not staring him down,
what if he
and
stares down the pitcher, drops though?
Now you're starting. If you are directing it to an individual,
yeah,
an opponent,
I got you. I beat you.
I do have an issue with that.
Really?
Yeah. And
so when you played, you would never engage in any of that activity, right?
I never did. No, not that was publicly caught.
See, and I'm not judging you for it. I think that's like competitive juices. Mano a mano, you bested that guy. Yeah, you're going to rub it in a little bit. And if he bests you, you got to suck it up and deal with it.
If you are trying to publicly shame another individual, I have an issue with that. Act like you've been there before. Act like you were supposed to win. And I'm not saying you have to be... There's a big difference between Barry Sanders and handing the ball to the official versus high-stepping into the end zone. If you're high-stepping into the end zone, there's no one around you. Even if there is somebody around you, as long as it's not directed at the opponent, at an individual, I don't really have a problem with that. Just like the touchdown or the interception celebrations. Like, part of that is just fun.
But it's
not being directed at an individual or at the sideline. If they start directing those, you know, interception celebrations at a sideline, yeah, there's a flag that's thrown.
Well, how about Tarik Skubal, the game Gov was at in the postseason? He makes a big show of shutting down the Cleveland Guardians, and he gestures to the crowd like, are you not entertained? That's gesturing out to an entire stadium. Is that?
Yeah, it's not an individual.
So that's okay.
Yeah, I have no problem with that.
Okay.
I know you are.
But you got to be willing to take that as a Tiger fan if somebody comes up later in a game and does an extra bat flip because Skubal did that. It's all fair game.
Yeah. I mean, again, if it's not directed at it, the reason I have an issue with this one is because when Noah Lyle comes across the finish line, he is staring down. He is showing up an individual. He's trying to embarrass that individual. And then it's followed up with that action is followed up with the push. So one thing leads to another. I'm not saying either one is right.
Yeah, I would say if you're pushing someone because they ran faster than you and you're not happy that they, quote, showed you up, run faster than them next time. And he has before.
Right, yeah. But he didn't push them because he got beat. He got pushed.
Because he had his feelings hurt.
No, because he got shown up.
His feelings were hurt.
With the stare down.
Feelings were hurt. He was stared down. He felt embarrassed.
Well, there's a big difference between what we're talking about. It's not, he's lost before and hasn't pushed people after a loss. That's not it. It's the act of staring down.
Yeah, the stare down hurt his feelings and he pushed him.
Yeah.
Am I wrong? I mean, you don't have to like how I'm presenting that, but that's what happened.
There's a difference between the stare down and losing.
Agreed.
Okay, so but you're trying to make it one.
No, I'm saying him losing and then being stared down. The stare down is specifically what triggered him. It triggered him because he felt bad.
If there's no stare down, there's no push.
And if he didn't lose...
Because he didn't push because he lost. He pushed because he got shown up by an individual that was all about me, me, me. And I know it's an individual sport.
I was gonna say, dude,
but he is trying to embarrass him in the moment.
You know what's why the stare down wouldn't have happened? If he didn't lose the race. He couldn't stare him down if he won the race.
All right, so if we go back to the race that happened before where he won, he didn't stare down Noah Lyles when he crossed the finish line.
He could have. He chose not to.
Right, he decided that he was going to act with some class.
So that's what it is. 248-539-9797. I don't mind creating a little bit of competitive angst either, right? So the other guy goes, damn,
well,
I got...
You don't mind booing kids either. So, I mean, it all goes
in
context.
Well, that's part of being at a game, and I think that's part of sports. Like, let's not take this so seriously or so sanctimoniously. Like, he stared me down. Get back in the gym, beat him next time. And that goes for everything. Like, the pitcher gives up a home run, he doesn't like the stare down or an audacious bat flip. Get him on strikes the next time and give him an extra fist bump. Like, what's wrong with that? That's competitive juices. That's creating a tension. That's creating, I can't wait till the next time these two guys compete. I mean, we're talking about sprinting in a non-Olympic year.
You're not always going to win.
Right.
You will lose. And some of it goes to how is... No one's a good loser, all right? That's no one likes losing. But if you are... When you lose, if you're shown up by somebody who you've already beaten, yeah, and I get it. Hey, run faster. And we'll get a chance to see the rematch. No one's going to watch it because no one cares. But in the instant, and that's why I asked the question, where is the line for people?
Yeah.
Where do you cross the line? 248-539-9797 from taunting or just, hey, that's part of competition.
Yeah, it's a good question. And I think, you know, you said stuff would happen behind, you know, the
bottom
camera.
Of a pile. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I mean, but... So there's one thing, but it's also not a public display of trying to embarrass another individual.
So if it's just you and him, you pancake a guy and you give a little extra on the way up. That's you going, I gotcha. Right?
No, I actually might help him up.
Oh, okay.
And just tell him, hey, you know, enjoy the grass because I'll do it again next time.
It'll be a long day for you.
But again, I'm not announcing that to the stadium.
Right. What if a guy got a sack on you? And did the sack dance directed at you? That's not okay.
Right.
But if he directed it at...
Yeah, I mean, trust me, I've given up sacks. And
what if he does it to the quarterback? The guy he sacked, he's kind of going a little extra
on the
way
up. Okay, well, ask Robert Porche how that went.
248-539-9797. Let's get to Ray on a cell. Ray, good morning.
Hey, good morning, y'all.
Good morning.
This Noah Lyles, Kenny Benarek thing is a lot deeper than just a stare down and he got his feelings hurt. They have a Twitter account, Track Spice, and this guy's been hiding behind the Track Spice Twitter account and saying all this stuff about Lyles and when he had COVID in the Olympics and all that stuff. So it wasn't just show up, I beat you, and I stare down. No, these guys been going at it for a while. And, you know, if you ask me in my opinion, Benarek had to eat his words over the weekend.
Okay, so there's some context.
Okay.
He's been at it before. All right. So, I mean, that all plays a part of this.
Some rivalry.
Yeah.
In the backstory. Ticket Texter says, my line is when it becomes physical. When you physically touch the other person. Other than that, do what you want. If the other guy's mad, do better.
I agree with that. But let's go back. There's also the context of when they're slowing down, the race is over, they're kind of cooling down, and Noah Lyles kind of
it comes
veers
into
the
race.
Lane.
Yeah.
That's a physical impediment.
That's fair.
So now you're starting stuff.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. You're stepping up.
Like, we talk about the Tarek Skubal thing in Cleveland. Like, if Tarek Skubal had obstructed one of the Guardians from going into the dugout,
that would be that,
things are happening.
You shouldn't do
right.
that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Agreed. Thomas in Detroit, what do you think?
I mean, man, I look at it like this. He stared me down. All right, I got to go back out there and beat him. I can't be no sucker and just be like, oh, well, I'm going to push him because now you're going out like one. Beat him if you don't like it. Because I know when I used to dunk on dude, I'm looking you dead in your face like, hey, I'm going to do this all day. You're going to have to stop it.
Right.
I'm going to stop you on the other end.
All right. And so as Noah Lyles comes into Bednarik's lane, and he starts to approach him, that's okay.
I'm not saying that's okay, but Noah Lyles be tripping sometimes. But I've seen the contact between these two. But like I said, they got another meet coming up. Man, go in there and beat him. you get to do the same thing. Like, okay, now what's happening?
Right.
You leave it at that.
Yeah, a little extra fuel on the fire is all it is.
Yeah. I mean, I enjoy the competition. I'm cut from that cloth. I'm cut from that cloth. Like, I ain't these new dudes. I'm like 40 some years old, 50, actually 50. I still dunk on some of these young dudes and look at them and be like, hey, you can still get this business.
That's awesome.
I'm gonna give you that work. I'll give you that work.
Yeah, in Bednarik's defense, he did, when he was talking to the media, he said, last time we lined up, I beat him. That's all I could say. Next time we line up, I'm going to win. So he's addressing it, and he's not denying the fact that he lost. He lost fair and square.
Yep.
And he actually says, I got to give him his props. He won the race. He was the better man today.
Texter says, classless move by the sprinter, Russ in a car. Saying it's over the line.
Mm-hmm. It literally was. The line.
They have their lines
at the line, yeah. Over the line.
Reggie Jackson in his big October homers often leaned back and watched the ball depart. That wasn't taunting. That was admiring a great accomplishment. Yeah. What bothers me about Kerry Carpenter showboating is that he gets kind of mouthy about his religion. And it doesn't seem very Christ-like to showboat and say, look at me in that situation. You added a note, is bat flipping a sin?
Yeah, that's what that made me.
What would Jesus do? Come on. Come on.
I knew that'd get you guys. Seriously, you would come to the bat flipping's a sin.
So if you're a Christian athlete, you can't
show any personality.
Come on.
Yeah. And if somebody does something to him because they didn't like it,
yeah, turn the other cheek.
Yeah.
Okay. There are lessons. They teach this. This one says Costas.
Jesus was a carpenter.
They teach this.
I think you just glossed over that. Yes, Jesus was a carpenter. Yes, John, they have Bible study. I'm sure he's well-read.
Yes.
Costas obviously never played sports at a high level. Waiting for you
How many people have at some
point? Am I supposed to defend that?
I mean, how many people in our audience have played beyond high school? You played in high school.
Yeah, look, I didn't play college at a high level like John. I certainly didn't play professional sports.
I mean, Ben Thomas did. He's dunking on fools at 50.
But yeah, right, we just got a guy, Thomas, calling in, and I mean, he's all about it. Yeah. Like, I just think it's a question of competitiveness and where your line is. I'm not telling you John's line's wrong or my line's right. I just view it as if the other guy shows you up, you take it on the chin and you go at him twice as hard and try to beat him next time. And if someone's feeling it and wants to stare you down or pimp a homer or high step into the end zone, sports are fun. I like that stuff.
Yes.
Yes. No, let us
public
know.
Show of embarrassment. Yes.
Not a fan. All right, fine. 97.1. Talking taunting, a little bit inspired by last night. Kerry Carpenter enjoying that home run. No issue with that. John, you don't have a problem. He wasn't showing anybody up.
Nope.
Noah Lyles staring down his countrymen as he beat him in the 200 meter. And then a little shove afterwards, initiated by second place.
Yeah.
Got us talking. Yeah. 248-539-9797. Do you guys remember when Jared Weaver was taunting until Carlos Guillen went deep on him? Tom and Flat Rock. Yeah, that's a great example of tensions building. That's one of those great moments.
Yeah, respond.
Love both sides of it. Yeah. Loved Weaver and then loved the stare by Guillen. That is still that game, man. Wow. Then it's because of this stuff.
Yes, it adds something to it. Sports are entertainment. They're feisty. They're competitive. They're not always perfect. They're not always sportsmen. It's not always sanctimonious.
Right. And everybody's going to have their own line.
Yeah. And where is it for you?
Yeah.
Ticket texters. I don't see an issue with any type of taunting. If you do something good, let them know about it. Shouldn't have let me do it. Devin and Southgate. And one that says it's when you physically touch the other person. Other than that, everything's fair game. You can talk trash. Like, that's huge in basketball.
Right.
And so it
even goes to, we've talked about this with coaches, and it seems to happen more in football.
Yeah.
Where you're up by 5 touchdowns in the fourth quarter, and you air one out and you score a touchdown. I don't see that as showing another team up. It's probably a backup quarterback. Could be third or fourth string. Those guys want to play too, and your job is to stop them.
Right, that's how I've always viewed it.
But again, I don't see that as showing up an individual. It may be showing up a team.
Yeah.
But again, it's you have 11 out there on defense. We've got 11 on offense. Do I need to go deep? Probably not. But I also want to get work for the guys that have put in the work at practice.
So I've looked at it like this. Is it running up the score and does it rub people the wrong way? Yes. If the other team would like to just quit and go home, we can end the game. But if we're going to play and they're going to put out, to your point, 11 on defense, if they're going to run complex schemes, if they're going to disguise coverages and blitz, if they're not going to run flag football defense, the respectful thing to do is to compete the entire 60 minutes. Mm-hmm. And we intend to do that without tying a hand behind our back. If our backups are already in, why can't they run the real offense?
Right. And I know that there's been some great moments in the NFL. It's brought up on Twitch. NFL should allow taunting. The 49ers versus Cowboys game with Terrell Owens and Emmitt Smith going back and forth claiming the Dallas logo was one of the most fun football games ever.
Well, yeah, and they got flagged for it.
Right.
That's the point.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
they didn't allow taunting, but it happened.
They were penalized and felt shame.
Tech says, Jesus flipped tables. I think a Christian athlete can flip a bat.
Yeah, those tax collectors.
Let's get to Heather with the news.
We're a bit biblical on them.
Take him to church. All right, what do we got with the news?
Yeah. There it is.
Well, not that shocking, but a new survey has found that the vast majority of adults are at least somewhat stressed out about the cost of groceries as prices continue to rise. So it found that about half of all Americans say the cost of groceries are a major source of stress in their life right now. 33% say, they're just a minor stress. And then only 14% say, no stress at all. Younger adults have more stressors, financial stressors in their life. Cost of housing, the amount of money they have in their bank account is more stressful on the younger adults than it is for those 60 and up. But overall, the cost of groceries is affecting everyone.
Oh, it's everything. But I mean, I think about those not living the dink lifestyle. I think about John with his army of children. Like, we like to do fresh fruit. I know you like to do fresh fruit. I mean, the amount of groceries you have to buy to feed that family.
Well, that's why when you get your fresh fruit, you go to places like Costco. Yep. You find other means where you can save a few dollars and still feed the family.
It's tough, fresh fruit, because it goes bad so fast.
Yep.
We'll buy this massive... Our family loves strawberries. Well, the kids love strawberries. Yeah, we do too, but if you don't eat them quick enough, they all go moldy and nasty.
Yeah, so you, fuzzy.
But we try to buy them at Costco too because...
Right. And it's... So the fresh produce is one of those things where you don't necessarily want to buy in bulk because they go bad. But if you don't, then you're going to the store every day.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
See, down in Tecumseh, we got these roadside farm things that you can stop off the side of the road.
Yeah. I love the roadside farms. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, get your honey, your corn.
Tomatoes.
Yeah.
I love it all. Those planning on going to an Eagles game this season, or maybe really any NFL season or NFL game, may want to make sure you're going with a full stomach and a strong buzz, as long as you can get there safely. Concession prices are out of control. So there's a photo of a menu from one of the food stands inside the stadium. This is for Eagles games, right? It was posted online, and the prices are really crazy. So it shows the price for chicken cutlets, $17. Now, compared to the actual restaurant, if you went to the restaurant and ordered this, $7.99. So crazy markup just to get the same thing within the stadium.
But this is every stadium though, right?
Crab fries. I'm guessing, but I don't have prices to give you exact numbers. $17.50 for crab fries, buffalo cutlets, $17. A cheese cup, $4. And then, of course, when you go to get your drink, just a can of beer, $18.50. Yeah. A large pop, $12.50.
Wow. Oh,
yeah. Super.
Unbelievable.
Oh, want to guess the water price? Bottled water.
$8.
$7.75.
That's crazy.
It is.
For a bottle of water, yeah.
And what's crazy.
What would it cost you to come out of there with a buzz?
Is that I was looking at minimum wage prices, right? Because they're saying those who make minimum wage cannot afford to go to a game there because they say the current minimum wage in Pennsylvania is $7.25. Which got me thinking. I was like, "That seems ridiculously low."
So for an hour, I started googling, you can buy half a beer.
Woohoo!
At the ball game.
Yeah,
wow,
sweet. There's a zoo in Denmark that's going viral for their unconventional approach to making sure their animals are well fed. The zoo has asked the public to donate any of their unwanted pets to feed all of the predators.
I'm sorry. They want
unwanted pets. So if you
dogs,
decide
cats,
you don't want Roomba anymore,
don't say that.
Give it to the zoo. They're not looking specifically for cats or dogs. Specifically, they want chickens, rabbits, guinea pigs, but they also say that they'll take animals up to the size of a horse.
Okay.
So it sounds like
if you got one that's
It's awful. People are very upset by it. They're disgusted by it because they're thinking of their beloved little Fifi that they're going to give up to a lion.
So it's one thing to give up a healthy pet. It's another thing that if your pet is going to pass, that it is the natural progression. It's going to die anyway. What?
Yeah, but how about with some dignity? Not in the mouth of a lion.
I cannot imagine taking the family dog that's ill, dying of cancer. Where I know it's good. I know it's. We got to put it down.
Yes.
I can't imagine.
I hate
though.
To think it could help give life to another animal.
No, but look, it'll,
so it's why people donate organs.
Just decompose in the ground, and it'll be good for the soil and all that stuff. That's come on.
I hear your point, John. I had a talk with this with my dad a while ago. He called it the circle of life.
Yeah, it is a circle
it
of
is
life.
The circle
yes,
of life. I guess. Yeah. Finally, in 2 years from now, all eyes will be on the sky. The eclipse of the century is set to take place on August 2nd, 2027. And according to NASA, it's when the moon will move between the sun and the earth, obviously, for up to 6 minutes and 23 seconds. It'll be the longest eclipse totality until 2114. Is that how we're going to say that?
What?
Like, how do you say that year?
What?
2114? Is that how
you
say it?
I guess that's how we'll say it.
Sorry, it looks funny on paper.
We have to deal with it, right? I mean,
2114, 2114.
Well, I'll be dead.
Yeah, it's not different than 2014.
I know, but it just looks different when you see it on paper,
2120. Not an issue I think most of us will have to deal with.
Yeah, but
very common football score.
If yes, 2114, yes.
Want to see this total eclipse, you're going to have to travel overseas. Like, you're going to have to go far. Oh, okay. The best view will be in Egypt. You can see it really well in Spain, Morocco,
cool. We can see what's
Algeria.
Under the pyramids at the same time. Oh, I wonder if there'll be anything that'll come to life in those 6.5 minutes. Come out of the pyramids. Maybe that's why it's happening. It's all is coming together.
So we won't be in the path of totality?
We will not be in the path of totality.
I love that show.
That was great.
Yeah.
It's Heather with the news, 97.1.
Oh, good drop.
Three of them yesterday, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, three for the Twins as well.
Yeah.
And that was a ding dong we just played.
Thank you, Craig. Good morning, everybody. 97.1, Jim Costa, John Jansen. We got Heather Park. We got Gov and Greg behind the glass. We've been talking some Tiger baseball today. If you missed any of the discussion, go back, Odyssey Rewind, including the nursery rhyme that Heather is singing because of this team.
Yeah. Well, you hear it over and over again. And it's funny, you asked me to say it now and I can't remember how it starts.
Finnegan.
Poor old Michael Finnegan, begin again. There was an old man named Michael Finnegan. He had whiskers on his chin again. They fell off. And then grew in again.
This is the first time we've got Heather to sing on the show.
Singing. That's not singing. That's just saying a riddle.
It's a little rhyme. It's a little rhythm there. Yeah.
How do we know it's not your singing?
Oh, well.
Yeah.
That's definitely not my singing.
If you sing it, then we'd know that that wasn't your singing.
Well, yeah. Maybe one day.
We'll trick you into it at some point.
No word of confirmation if Finnegan's going to use that as his closer intro. I'm thinking
his
not.
Walkout music, probably.
Yeah, I'm thinking not. But he was good last night. He's been good in both appearances. He was the real major league arm that we highlighted. Mm-hmm. I jokingly said Finnegan and friends. He was the one I thought, hey, there's a track record. He could be a back end of the bullpen guy, and he has, right? He's closed out two games already.
Right, and so it takes a little bit of pressure. I know everybody says, well, does it get Vest out of his rhythm? Well, recently it's probably a rhythm that you might want to be out of. Yeah. Same with Canely. And so it takes a little pressure off them, just gives them another weapon, another arm. And I know Scott Harris talks about all, shapes and, release and all of that stuff. So it does add to the bullpen, and he's been good.
Paddock today, Flaherty tomorrow, and then the Angels this weekend.
Yeah.
All right, John. NFC North. We're going to be out at Lions practice tomorrow. Mm-hmm. By the way, Brad Holmes will join us tomorrow, 8:50.
Yes.
AJ Hinch tomorrow on the show as well.
Ooh, a lot of good questions for him.
Busy day.
Mm-hmm.
NFC North. We've been talking off air, a little bubble to the surface here. The Lions are the favorites in the North. who is their biggest threat outside of it? Because I've made the case for the Packers. You've been sticking up for the Vikings. Mm-hmm. Nobody's talking about the Bears. And we want you guys to participate and weigh in on this.
Yeah. I mean, who's the biggest threat in the division? And
the actual Packers are also an option.
Yes.
The actual Vikings and the actual Bears for consideration as well.
I always love those. The reason I say the Minnesota Vikings, I just feel like they are from top to bottom, and I'm not putting quarterback at the top, but the weapons that they have, the offensive line that they have. If you've got a young quarterback, an inexperienced quarterback, a guy that still has to prove, can he even throw a pass in the NFL? You have Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, Jalen Naylor. You've got Aaron Jones in the backfield. You've got TJ Hockenson as a quality tight end. And then that offensive line is going to protect him. They're going to protect him better than the offensive line protects Jordan Love. And for Jordan Love, I feel like he is still relying too much on his athleticism. It's there. And at times, you're going to have to use it. It's better to have it than not. But I think there are times where it becomes a crutch for him. And he uses it too much. He gets outside the pocket. And that's where he makes really bad decisions. We saw it in the Lions game up there, you know, last year. That interception that he threw inside the red zone, like, that was as bad as it gets.
Yep.
And so some of it's Kevin O'Connell. And what he was able to do with Sam Darnold, I think the skill set sets itself up for JJ to be better than Sam Darnold. But Sam Darnold has the advantage of, what, 8-9 years of... Some of it is disastrous play in the NFL and learning from that, but seeing things as a backup as well. So, and you can't, there's no substitute for experience. I'll be the first to admit that. Then it's Brian Flores on defense. I think he is really good at creating things. And I know what you're going to say. Jared Goff has carved up Vikings defenses. He's carved up a lot of defenses. I've got a lot of respect for Brian Flores and the way that he constructs. They've made some adjustments to that defense. And I think they're the toughest competition in division for the Detroit Lions.
So let me poke some holes in it, like the holes on a block of cheese. Green Bay brings back stability at quarterback, head coach, and both coordinators. We've talked about how the Lions, a little bit of stability being lost with a new quarterback in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. There's some stability that's lost. And there's a whole bunch of changes in Chicago. I don't feel like you're going to argue for the Bears, but just throwing it out there, that's two new coordinators and a new head coach, and they got to unlearn some of Caleb Williams' tendencies. With J.J. McCarthy, do I expect him to be better than Sam Darnold in year one? I do not. John, they didn't follow your blueprint to a T. It's not like they drafted McCarthy and had him practice all year and get the physical reps. He was injured. This is out of the box. Did Michigan really have a complex passing attack? No. There's a lot that still has to happen developmentally for J.J. McCarthy. I'm not intimidated by that in year one. I'm also not intimidated by Kevin O'Connell, who's lost 5 straight games to Dan Campbell and the Detroit Lions, including last year where O'Connell got outside himself and tried to keep up with Dan Campbell's gambles. Brian Flores, defense works great when you pressure mediocre quarterbacks. It doesn't when you face quarterbacks who are more experienced. Experienced quarterbacks love when you vacate zones and blitz because they can diagnose it and punish you, and Goff has, and it's why when Minnesota gets in the playoffs, they get bounced immediately. Kevin O'Connell and Flores, as great a coach as they are, have not won a playoff game in Minnesota. And the Lions are ultimately going to be threatened not by what happens in the regular season, but what happens in the postseason. I've seen Jordan Love and LaFleur win a playoff game. I've seen them
against a very bad Dallas team.
They
played somebody.
The Vikings couldn't beat Daniel Jones and the Giants a couple years ago. I mean, O'Connell's had his chance to get a freebie and hasn't picked it up. Green Bay is the second best team in this division, and I think they're the biggest threat.
What do you see from the Green Bay defense? Because when I look at that defense, and I look and I say, okay, Lucas Van Ness has been a guy that's underperformed since he was drafted. Rashawn Gary, he's been about what people thought he would be since he's been drafted, and he's effective on the edge. But I look at the rest of the defense, the secondary is not as good as it was last year.
It definitely is not.
And so I'm not wowed by anything defensively that I see from Green Bay.
I think their front is better than their secondary. I know Kenny Clark's a little long in the tooth, but him on the same line with Rashawn Gary is a productive group. Quay Walker, and I thought Edgerton Cooper, as a rookie last year at the linebacker spot, flashed. He's got a little of that branch instinctiveness. Obviously, linebacker safety, not the same player, but that, like, hey, I can blitz him. I can have him run out to the flat and make plays on the ball. The defense isn't elite, but I think they got some dudes on that defense. And if we're doing the comparison head-to-head with Minnesota, I know they don't have the pass catchers that the Vikings do.
Nope.
But I think Jacobs is a much better tailback than Aaron Jones is. And they're going to feature and feed him, and they did last year.
Sure, but I just don't. I think Josh Jacobs behind that offensive line, that's one thing that will mitigate some of his. I do think he's a better running back than Aaron Jones. I don't know if there's much question about that, but I don't think behind that offensive line, I think it's the great equalizer for him.
Yeah, and the Vikings have a huge edge at offensive line. I mean, you can argue they have the best offensive line in the division, right?
You could argue that.
We know how important that is here, right? I think it's the Viking. A lot of it has to do with, I'm not a Jordan Love fan. I just think he's a middle-of-the-road QB. That's a divisive opinion in this town. Some people I know on this station love Jordan Love. I don't think it was the injury last year. I think he's the type of guy in the end that's going to throw a pick in a big moment. Mm-hmm. That's just the way I see him, and I've got evidence of it throughout his career that that's what he did. And I think Kevin O'Connell's probably the best coach outside of Dan Campbell in the division, and I think it's debatable between the two, to be honest. Campbell's owned him, so he's got the head-to-head, and head-to-head scoreboard's always the final.
Yeah.
Why is LaFleur not a better coach than Kevin O'Connell?
I just personally believe Kevin O'Connell is a better coach. I think Matt LaFleur really should have gotten to a Super Bowl when Aaron Rodgers was still good. Like that decision against Brady in that NFC Championship game, come on, dude. Seriously, that's coaching not to lose.
Right, but in his defense, and I don't want to take up for cookies, you are allowed to learn from your mistakes. We've seen Dan Campbell do that.
Well, I'd love to. How many more years is Matt LaFleur going to get to do something?
Because how many more years till Kevin O'Connell wins a playoff game?
I know. He's had a little bit less time.
Okay.
How many more years till he wins a playoff game? Much more transition at quarterback.
Yes.
True. I just know
when LaFleur lost Love briefly last year, you really highlighted the fact that Malik Willis was able to step in.
Yeah, that he was 2-0.
Yeah. So, I mean, does that not speak to the offense?
It's because of who they played. I mean, they played the team with the number one pick.
Right.
248-539-9797. Take a team from the division. Biggest threat for the Lions, 97-1.
Hey, Detroit, it's Heather. Did you know military veterans in our area are holding on to millions in debt? That's why Verizon is partnering with the Detroit Lions to tackle it head on. At Verizon, they know how valuable veterans are. They employ over 8,000 of them, and they don't want to see veterans held back by financial debt. So they're stepping up, committing to eliminate up to $1 million in veteran debt in the greater Detroit area this year. Plus, for every Lions win, an additional $100,000 will be eliminated. And that's not all. Verizon is giving active military and veteran families a special mobile discount plan starting at just $25 per line a month for 4 lines on unlimited welcome. And they're backing it with a 3-year price lock guarantee. Verizon is freeing some of our best from financial burdens. Stop by a Verizon store to learn more and see how they're honoring our veterans today. Discount for personal lines only for military and veterans. Approved verification documents required. Auto pay and paper-free billing required. In times of congestion, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Price guarantee applies to then current base monthly rate. Additional terms apply.
Some ticket texts pouring in and an update on the Lions' backup quarterback situation. Hmm. We're asking you about the NFC North and who the biggest threat is. John says Vikings. I say Packers. Tom backed John. Ticket texters, what about the Bears? It's a real text we got. What do you think of the Bears, John? Dead last again or what?
Yeah, dead last in the division. Yeah. I think there's going to be an adjustment period with Ben Johnson. And I've said this all along. This is Dan Campbell's offense. And Ben Johnson, maybe he's going to take the entire offense with him. And if he does, if he's able to call that offense there by himself, great. I don't know that there's any reason to believe he can't. But what we've seen so far in little snippets, and it's not just haters posting things from training camp. There's a lot of information coming out of Chicago Bears training camp that Caleb Williams is struggling, whether it's picking up the offense, it's accuracy, throwing the ball, and I think he's getting a hard time from Ben Johnson for it, which he should.
He should. This is the time for it. This is the time to make mistakes. This is the time to get yelled at.
But can he handle that pressure?
Well, and how much can you do overnight here? I mean, Caleb Williams is more physically gifted than Jared Goff. He won a Heisman Trophy in college. He was a number one pick like Goff, but he has more mobility to his game. Here's the problem. Goff's the more accurate quarterback, the time on target quarterback, the reliable for an offensive coordinator calling plays quarterback. Caleb Williams likes to do a lot of squirrely schoolyard stuff. And if you have to unteach that before you can start to teach like a fundamentally sound offense, that's not going to happen overnight. It's not going to happen in week one or week two when the Lions face the Bears. And it may happen by the end of the season, but by that point, they're not winning this division.
Right.
I think Ben Johnson knows he has his work cut out for him. They tried to beef up the offensive line. I don't think they're a serious threat in the North this season.
Do you guys think Caleb Williams will ever truly find it? Like, do you think...
honest answer, I shrugged. I don't know. I mean...
I think he can. But that doesn't answer your question. Will he?
I'd probably still bet yes.
But it's a matter of what level. Can he find it and take them to a Super Bowl?
Well, that's so hard.
How about throwing for 4,000 yards?
Josh Allen hasn't been to a Super
Bowl. I think it'll be Josh Allen? No. And do I think it'll be Lamar Jackson? No.
Tier 2 ceiling?
Sure.
Yeah.
Guy says love is Prescott. Prescott is love. Talking about the Packers and their threat level.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. And I think he's almost Prescott light. Like, Dak Prescott had some really good years. Like, he was a revered player, but he was always a tier two quarterback that's probably slipped back to a three. To me, I don't know. I don't think Love's ever played as good as Prescott did.
Not
at his
to
peak.
This point, no.
The backup quarterback news: Adam Schefter saying Teddy Bridgewater is visiting Tampa today and expecting to sign with the Buccaneers. It will be Bridgewater's eighth team and his third NFC South team to go with the Saints and the Panthers.